The Dynamite Kid. This was the final Dark Side of the Ring episode in the first half of season 3. So one last chance to ruin another part of my childhood. And now that all of the AEW fans realize this is not the Dynamite review they were expecting, I can hear them clicking off the video. You know, you hear the expression, he was ahead of his time, or she was ahead of her time. You hear that a lot. Dynamite Kid really was ahead of his time as a performer. The stuff he was doing in the ring 35, 40 years ago is so commonplace in today's wrestling. It's on our televisions every week. But he had an intensity and an explosiveness in everything that he did that really made him stand out. Nobody will doubt his ability in the ring. The careers that he influenced, from Chris Benoit to Bryan Danielson to Davey Richards, and who knows how many dozens more. Mick Foley has said that on his Mount Rushmore of wrestlers, Dynamite would be on there. Dave Meltzer in the episode that aired on Vice said that there is no Jushin Liger without Tiger Mask and Dynamite Kid in the matches those two had. One of the most influential wrestlers of all time. Those matches with Tiger Mask are the stuff of legend. The matches with the British Bulldogs and the Hart Foundation. I think it was Bret Hart once who said the people may have paid to come see Hulk Hogan, but after he went on before intermission, they all stayed to the end to see the Harts and the Bulldogs. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. When you look at, for example, the WCW Monday Nitro days and the NWO stuff, people wanted to see stars. They wanted to see the big names. Those were the ones who sold the pay-per-views. But you needed variety on those shows, and some of the more fun memories I have from flipping between Raw and Nitro and watching Nitro are from the Cruiserweight matches. And I'm sure I'm not the only one who would say the same thing. But there was a dark side to Tom Billington. And on a show called Dark Side of the Ring, you knew that would be talked about, and it was. The most powerful testimony came from his ex-wife Michelle and two of his daughters. I did not realize that Michelle was sisters with Julie Hart, Bret's ex-wife. She was also interviewed for this. Who would have thought that we would get Julie Hart in two different documentaries airing in the same week? She was also interviewed for the Bret Hart biography on A&E. But I didn't realize the two of them were sisters, which is how she and Dynamite met. They interviewed Danny Spivey, who still looks very scary. I was completely distracted by that vein jetting out of the side of his head. He was very good friends with Dynamite. Clearly still had a love and affection for him and got very emotional and teared up when he was talking about his passing. He did say that Dynamite was like one giant muscle back in the day. They all took steroids together. They would give each other shots. This was back when it was all still legal. He said they would throw the steroid needles into the walls of their hotel room like a dartboard and just leave them there. And guys would come back and would just grab a random needle and use it. Crazy. Crazy times. But you know, this notion that Dynamite didn't start taking steroids until he got to the WWF, which I think some people might come away from this thinking, or at least it got worse. Maybe it did get worse, but this notion that he really didn't do that stuff until he got to Vince, until he got to New York. He was taking them for years while he was in Stampede. There was a book on the history of Stampede Wrestling called Pain and Passion. And they mentioned that it was the Junkyard Dog who first introduced Dynamite Kid to steroids in the late 70s. He was a small guy. He's around 5'8". I mean, to me, 5'8 is about average. It's about what I am. But I'm no wrestler. For a wrestler, 5'8", especially back then, that was considered small. And he did steroids to get bigger and to fit in more and to compensate for how small he was. And he paid for it. He paid a very heavy price for it. His body broke down because of it. That and the hard style that he wrestled, it just did a number on his body. And they had the fan cam footage from the live event where his back went out in late 86 while they were the tag team champions. It was the Bulldogs against Bob Orton and Don Morocco. And it was a simple move. It was a drop-down leapfrog spot. And even before Morocco, who was out on the apron, delivered a knee to the back as Dynamite hit the ropes. It wasn't even the knee. Even before the knee connected, his back just went out on him. And he collapsed, and he had to be stretchered out. He had to have his back operated on. He had crushed discs in his back that had to be removed. He had no business being back in the ring so soon, but Vince McMahon wanted the Bulldogs to drop the belts to the Hart Foundation, so Dynamite went from his wheelchair out to the ring, barely took a bump. Davey took the fall in the ring, and they got the belts off of them, and Dynamite went right back to his wheelchair. His wife said that things got worse after the back injury, and she talked about his violent mood swings and throwing her in a closet one night. She had to sleep in the closet, which she was fine with because she knew at least she would be safe there. And the worst of it, which was when she served divorce papers to him and wanted him to leave, and he grabs her by the hair, he drags her across the room. This is in front of their kids, mind you, okay, while she was pregnant. And he goes and he grabs his gun, he points it at her head. She called his bluff, which was not the smartest thing for her to do, probably. That would have been a hell of a memory for those kids if he had pulled that trigger. Just horrible stuff. And this is where, you know, I can't separate out the man from the wrestler and pretend that he didn't do shitty things to a lot of people. He did. He was very shitty to a lot of people. He did evil things to people. And it's okay to talk about that if you want to paint a fuller picture of the man's life. It's no different than with the Ultimate Warrior or anyone else. And that's why I will sit here and tell you about what a great wrestler he was and how influential he was. But you cannot ignore all of the other things that he did. One of the more demented stories about him, which was not covered in the documentary, but even he admitted it. Very matter-of-factly in the trailer for his Kickstarter several years ago. I think it was a Kickstarter for a Dynamite documentary that was never made. Or at least if it was, it was never released. I don't think the finished video was ever released. But he was asked about this story. He had a friend whose daughter was in a car accident many years ago. And the doctor said that her x-rays looked fine. There really was nothing wrong with her. The girl's father was worried that they might not be able to collect any of the insurance money. So he asked Dynamite to do him a favor, to do him a solid, and break his daughter's legs. And Dynamite did. He took a hammer, and he broke her legs. And he was asked about that, and he says, true. Because it's one of those stories you hear about, it's like, oh, that's got to be a myth. I mean, that can't possibly be real. That's got to be an urban legend. But in his own words, that actually happened. Spivey, on the episode, talked about how Dynamite and Davey would slip Halcyon pills into people's drinks, which is a sleeping pill. They thought it was funny. Brian Blair of the Killer Bees, who now heads up the Cauliflower Alley Club, he said they got Outback Jack to his room one night. This is when Outback Jack was very outspoken at that time. He had a reputation for mouthing off, you know, I could drink more than you, blah, blah, blah. And he was going to drink Mr. Fuji under the table one night. It was at a hotel bar somewhere out in California. And they had slipped Halcyon pills to him as well. He was hardly the only one, but they slipped the pills in his drink when he wasn't looking. And he ended up going out like a light. He was just totally out of it. They had to carry him back to his hotel room. They put him on the bed. He rolls off the bed onto the floor. And again, this part wasn't talked about in the episode, but there's Dynamite. This is according to Brian Blair. There's Dynamite now with Outback Jack on the floor. Dynamite unzips his pants and he pisses all over his face, like full on stream. just pissing all over the guy's head, his face, his mouth, like... I mean, look, slipping anything into someone's drink does not make you a funny guy. It makes you an asshole. I'm sorry. And, you know, there's been other stories about injecting Jake Snake Damian with steroids. Tito Santana on a show a few years ago. And he's one of, I think, many people who's talked about this. But there's Tito Santana talking about the Bulldogs, how they used to inject their dog Matilda with steroids. I guess for kicks. Just really deranged stuff. But they had Jacques Rougeau on the show. And I kind of figured they would. I was kind of hoping they would, because how can you not tell this story? They had Jacques on to talk about the famous incident with the Bulldogs and the Rougeaus, or more specifically, Dynamite and Jacques. You can blame Kurt Hennig for this. He's playing cards in the back with Jacques one day, is Kurt. And Dynamite comes up right... This is how Jacques told the story on the episode. They're playing cards. Dynamite comes up right behind him and just nails him with a punch right to the back of the head. Knocks him down. He starts punching and kicking him. Rougeau's head was so swollen, he said he looked like the Elephant Man. What they didn't mention is what led to Dynamite punching Jacques. It wasn't just that Dynamite one day said, hey, you know what? I'm going to go punch this fucking guy in the back of the head. One night, the Rougeaus come back from their match, and Kurt Hennig is acting all strange. And he's telling them, hey, you guys better check your bags. Something might have happened. And they check, and I guess there's things missing from the bags. And they suspected the Bulldogs had done something because the Bulldogs had a reputation for doing that kind of stuff. Well, the Bulldogs did not mess with their stuff. It was Kurt. And so a few days later, the same thing happens. And now Jacques is pissed. And he says, I'm going to go tell Pat Patterson. I'm going to go talk to him about what's going on. So he's going to rat out the Bulldogs and get them in trouble for something they didn't do. Hennig hears this. He goes straight to Dynamite. And he tells him what Jacques was telling people. And that is what led to Dynamite assaulting Jacques Rougeau. So now, after Jacques has been assaulted, he begins plotting his revenge. He felt like he had lost respect for being beaten up by a guy who's smaller than him. Like he had been emasculated. So every night, he's shadow boxing, like in his hotel room. He's getting ready for a fight. Like, he's getting ready to go to war, trying to map this out and figure out what he's going to do here. So now we finally get to D-Day, and I really wish they would have told this story in full on the episode, but I guess there's only so much time. We finally get to D-Day. Vince McMahon has been made very aware of what's been going on. He calls a talent meeting, gets everybody in a room, and he warns people that this type of fighting is not going to be tolerated anymore. No more. You start a fight, you're fired. The Rougeaus were not at that meeting. Jimmy Hart tells the story. He was managing the Rougeaus at the time. He went to go find them and said, hey, Vince wants everybody there for this meeting. And Jacques says, we're not going. And he starts to thank Jimmy for everything you've done for us. It's almost like he knows he's going to get fired for this. So they have this meeting. The Rougeaus are not there. But Vince ends up seeing Jacques and his brother, Raymond, in the hallway. And he says, I want to meet with you guys later. I can't right now. I got to go meet with Hogan. But we're gonna meet later. And at that point, Jacques realizes, shit, if we're going to do this, we need to do it now. Because once we get in a room with Vince, it's over. I can't come out of that meeting and then go beat the shit out of this guy. It's now or never. So they're waiting outside the cafeteria for Dynamite to come out. Pat Patterson happens to walk out of the cafeteria first. So that's like another shit, right? Here he comes. He goes walking by. And now here comes Dynamite. And there's no Davey. It's all by himself. And Jacques says, hello. And before Dynamite can even get a word out, Jacques smashes him right in the mouth with what he says was a roll of quarters. Knocks out four of his teeth. There's blood everywhere. Blood goes flying through the air. Dynamite doesn't even go down. Patterson sees this because he hears what happened. He sees this and he's like, what the fuck are you doing? And now Raymond, right, Jacques' brother, he's got Patterson up against the wall. He's telling him, mind your own business. This doesn't concern you. Look away. And Pat's yelling at Jacques to stop. Jacques is throwing jabs at Dynamite now, who's still down to one knee, but he's not down all the way. Bad News Brown heard the commotion. He pulls Jacques off of him. Davey Boy finally shows up. He pulls Dynamite away to get him to safety. Patterson gives Dynamite some money to go to the hospital to get all stitched up. Now, the Rougeaus are finally ready to go meet with Vince. They go to his office. Vince McMahon sees blood all over Jacques' hands and his eyes light up. Hogan is still sitting there in Vince's office. Hogan takes one look at Jacques' bloody hands and he says, "See you later, brother." He walks out. He don't want no part of this. The Macho Man is there that night as well. He hears the commotion. He opens the door to his dressing room and peeks out. He takes one look at Jacques with his hands all bloody, and Savage just closes the door. Seriously, this is my favorite wrestling story of all time. And they didn't do it justice on this show. Either Jacques didn't tell the full story, or he did, and they didn't have enough time to air the whole thing. And there's a lot more to it. I'm not going to get through the whole thing, but the story doesn't end there. But the part they did mention is Dino Bravo warning the Bulldogs not to bother Jacques or do anything stupid because the Rougeaus knew people up in Montreal who were friends with him, him being Bravo. And Bravo had a rep for having ties to organized crime. So the implication was, you fuck with these guys, bad things could happen to you and your family. Dynamite's wife said that he took it very seriously, seriously enough that they had to move. They moved the entire family to a new home, a new location, because they didn't feel safe. And when the producer relays that to Jacques, they say, you know, we spoke to Dynamite's ex-wife, and she says they took it very seriously and thought that something might happen to the family, and they moved. Jacques admits, he goes, oh, he goes, really? He goes, yeah, about that. He goes, that was all bullshit. I didn't know any mob guys. I just wrote a name down on a piece of paper. It was all bullshit. He goes, but I'm happy to find out it worked. It was all just a scare tactic. But the whole family was moved because they really thought that he might have connections. But after the gun incident with his wife, Dynamite moved out of Canada and back to England, and he never came back. And I know he did get married again. They didn't mention anything about the second wife. But he lived out the rest of his days alone as a recluse. The video of his last match, which they showed in Japan in 1996, is very sad to watch. He looks like just a shell of what he once was. A few years before he died, he suffered a series of strokes. He was in real bad shape. There was a documentary done on Tiger Mask. And as part of the documentary, they went searching for Dynamite, one of his greatest opponents, and they found him in a nursing home. And they put a laptop in front of him, and there's a video on screen of Sayama with his mask on, the Tiger Mask mask, chanting, "Tommy, wake up! Wake up, Tommy, wake up!" Like he's trying to rally him for a comeback. It was a sad sight, but you know, that's what years and years of abuse had reduced him to. They reduced him to being an invalid who couldn't take care of himself. And Dynamite died on his 60th birthday. And considering his health issues, it is amazing that he lived that long. A lot of his colleagues never made it out of their 30s, let alone their 40s or 50s. And he made it to 60. But you watch this episode, and that's really what it was. They covered, you know, some of his early days in wrestling and his family life, and then they go very quickly into the back injury, right into some of the more violent stories, and then his kind of sad demise. And you watch this and you realize that his friends clearly still loved him. They get very emotional talking about him. They miss him. Despite his flaws, his many, many, many flaws. But I said this after he died 3 years ago when I covered this on the show. The way you hear wrestlers talk about how Ric Flair influenced them or how Shawn Michaels influenced them and made them want to become a pro wrestler, there are a lot of people who would say the same exact thing about the Dynamite Kid and who are wrestling today because they watched the Dynamite Kid, and hey, this guy is small just like me. If he can do this, so can I. So you can't take that away from him. One of the most influential names in the history of the business is and will forever be the Dynamite Kid. But his dark side? Boy, was it dark. I thought the episode was excellent, though, despite the subject matter. I thought it was very well done. I look forward to the Second half of the season, it's coming back in September. I don't have the list in front of me, but I know that we're getting an episode on FMW. We're getting an episode on XPW. We're getting an episode on the WWE steroid trial, the Vince McMahon steroid trial. The Plane Ride from Hell is getting an entire episode devoted to it, as is Luna Vachon. We're getting one on Bruiser Bedlam, a.k.a. Johnny Canine, and Chris Canyon, which I'm sure is going to be a very sad story. It's very sad what happened to him. But I've been enjoying Season 3. I will be back when they are back for more reviews. I hope you've enjoyed all the reviews up to this point. I hope you'll leave a comment and let me know what you thought of the episode. And I will be back with you very soon for more Dark Side of the Ring as soon as they come back with the second half. So until then, take care, guys.